All right. Welcome to another edition of Shabbat Lounge. This is Matt
and Jake.
And we're coming to you with part two
of the rod
and the staff.
Well, the other way.
Yeah. We don't know which one is which, but we thought they would be a good reference to start this. But we do appreciate that you've stopped by and that you are willing to listen to us. And we ask, please, that you'd subscribe, that you'd leave comments, that you would give us a rating in places where you see us. And we just appreciate that you do that. We're just two people trying to get the word out and the message about getting out of Babylon and walking in the Torah, keeping the feast.
Yep. And the Shabbat.
Yep. And so that's what we're trying to do. And we do have some information about, there's a website. This would be like two ago. We talked to a guy about solar and steam off-grid living.
Yeah.
So if you're interested in that, we've got a great resource there.
Yeah. We mentioned that we would make the fixes to the, this link, which we did. So, And there's the video there. And
so there's Google Slides with all the information and the interview can be found there if you're interested. So right. We appreciate you checking that out and probably be useful. A lot of people that do listen and follow in this walk have homesteads, don't they, Jake?
Yes, that's right. They kind of go hand in hand, getting back to the way Yahweh kind of intended things to go.
Mm-hmm. And the guy we listened to, he's not a Torah follower yet. He could be one day. So, but he's a good resource and definitely had some good information about that.
Right.
But on our website, you've got links to basically everything we're about, and you can find that there. And to the Twitter, to the Facebook, to everything that we've posted. This has been going on since 2017. So there's quite a bit of content here. And but anyway, well, we're glad you're here.
Yes.
So let's go right into it, Jake. So Jake, I don't know what it was.
Right, so today is part two of Thy Rod and Thy Staff. If you missed part one, go back and watch part one first.
Yes.
Or some of this might be a little too confusing. It's very hard to follow us.
Yes.
Because of the...
maybe because I can't talk very well and lots of other reasons.
He can't talk. So, I can't listen. But it's a good combination.
So we're going to talk about the rod and the staff, but we're going to start with the menorah. And you may be asking yourself, what? How does the rod and the staff have any connection to a menorah? Well, if you haven't watched part one, go watch part one.
Yeah.
But we talk about how the oftentimes almond was the wood used for staff and used for a staff and a rod.
Right. Because of the hardness, right? Because durability, obviously, if I'm going to whack a wolf with the rod that's trying to eat my sheep, I don't want it to break.
Yeah.
Because then I'm in trouble.
Yeah.
So.
But then I guess you could use the sharp edge to stab it in the heart.
If it breaks off in such a manner, there's too many variables.
Yes, that's right. And doesn't, exactly.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of good connections between being watchful and being awake and being prepared. And
as a shepherd would be.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. And so we're going to go more into detail about the menorah and a few other things. There was something else that we just talked about, but we're going to go right into it with menorah. And this is an image that I found of a menorah in a glass case. Is it the menorah that was in the temple?
I would suggest no.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure that Josephus said that Jerusalem got burned so bad that, you know, the streets were, you know, full of the molten gold and the bricks, and that the Roman soldiers would come by and try to harvest all the gold and things that they could find that had melted out of the temple.
Yeah.
So probably didn't make it.
Right. And if you look at the description of the menorah when they're building it in the wilderness, essentially they're using half a gallon of gold. So this looks like a lot more than that in terms of how the volume of gold that they're using.
Oh, it's a lot.
Yeah.
So, and this is kind of, so Jake is going to read this, Exodus 25, 30 through 40.
And thou shalt set upon the table showbread before me always. And you shall make a candlestick of pure gold. Of beaten work shall the candlestick be made. His shaft and his branches, his bowls, his knops, and his flowers shall be of the same. And six branches shall come out of the sides of it. Three branches of the candlestick out of the one side, and three branches of the candlestick out of the other side. Three bowls made like unto almonds, with a knop and a flower in one branch, and three bowls made like almonds in the other branch, with a knop and a flower. So in the six branches that come out of the candlestick. And in the candlestick shall be four bowls made like unto almonds, with their knops and their flowers.
All right, you got your knops.
Knops, you up on your flowers.
Knops and flowers.
Yeah.
And that's interesting. I can't remember which translation I got this out of. It might have been Blue Letter, but it personifies it as he.
Hmm.
I don't think I caught that before.
Yeah.
And it's interesting that bowls, when I read the bowls, I thought of bowls of judgment. And so there's probably a connection between that can be made, but we're not going there today. But it is clearly a reference to the almond tree being very much a part of the design of this menorah. You know, candlestick, where do we see that term candlestick show up later in the text of the Bible?
Well, I know, but why don't you tell me? Why don't you tell those who don't know?
With the seven churches in the candlestick.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Okay. And so a lot of people, if you don't understand and you don't study this concept of the menorah, you miss out on the conception that when Yeshua is talking about candlesticks, he's talking about the menorah.
Right.
And as a kid growing up in the church, I had no idea. I'm like, we light the candle when the power goes out and it's this wax thing and you hold one in your hand. Yeah. That's what I thought when he said candlestick. I'm like, it's a candlestick.
Yeah.
Got it.
A stick with one candle in it.
Yes. I had no concept of a menorah, for sure.
Yeah.
So definitely a different concept than maybe what our Western mind thinks of when we see a candlestick. So we don't have many candles made of olive oil that burn.
Right. Although they make a good lamp, olive oil lamps. Hmm. I don't know can you make a candlestick out of olive oil?
I don't know.
I think it's got to be a puddle.
I don't think you can with a liquid. Basic science, solid liquid gas, maybe.
Yeah.
So
unless they
you can definitely light it on fire.
Yeah.
So it's like, can you make a candle out of gasoline? No. Don't try that at home. Many
sounds
have
like
tried.
A challenge to me.
So it makes me think of a story when we were camping and I saw a guy leading, it looked like Cub Scouts, and he showed them how to build a fire.
Oh.
And he used gasoline, I think, or some kind of fire starter. And he had all these little guys around him and he's teaching them, showing them how to build this fire. And you see him, of course, you know, it's like, oh, I need a little bit more there, you know. And of course he lights it and it's like, and then he walks away from the fire because it was really big.
Yes.
And he's like, he's hustling out of there and you see the fire just following him and it goes up his leg and then he's doing this. And I'm like, stop, drop and roll. And I'm like way far away from this scene, but I was like, he just gave those boys a lesson they will never forget.
Right.
What not to do.
Exactly.
So anyway, I don't know how that story came to be there, but we were all talking about fire.
Yes.
I like fire. I've always liked fire.
Who doesn't?
I like to build big fires, Jake.
Yeah, me too.
I've built some big ones.
Yeah.
I've built some big ones that have almost, I've built at least two that the fire department has come out on before.
That's always good.
Yeah, that's not good.
Yeah. We'd always stack pallets and they make a good fire. Mm. Also, gasoline. Yeah.
But this is not like that.
Right. You want to light those by shooting bottle rockets into them. Not.
That's right.
You don't want to be standing close when you do it.
And I've always wanted to build the menorah with a propane. and especially the menorah with propane that you can time to music. Like,
that sounds
that like would be a good Sukkot project.
That's a good Sukkot project, right?
And it's safe for everyone,
for fun for all ages.
Yes, yes. So the hard part is timing that to music. Anyway,
yes.
Sorry, we are going down the wrong path. So read Exodus 25, 30 through 40.
All right. And there shall be a knop under two branches of the same, and a knop under two branches of the same, and a knop under two branches of the same, according to the six branches that proceed out of the candlestick. Their knops and their branches shall be of the same, and it shall be one beaten work of pure gold. And thou shalt make the seven lamps thereof, and they shall light the lamps thereof, that they may give light over against it. And the tongs thereof and the snuff dishes thereof shall be of pure gold. Of a talent of pure gold shall you make it with all these vessels. And look that you make them after their pattern, which was shown thee in the mount. Now, when I would read this before, it'd be hard to picture, like, well, why does he keep saying, and two branches in the same, two branches of the same, two branches of the same. But when you see an accurate menorah, it makes perfect sense the way he's describing it. And you can see exactly what he's talking about with the, you know, the knops and the flowers and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And the almond shapes.
Yeah, which is interesting because we don't always think about nature being symmetrical, but he is a god of order for sure. And I can think of in the earlier video I referenced Turk's cap, there's a lot of flowers and things, and it's one of them that's perfectly symmetrical. Every single flower is exactly symmetrical. I mean, it never fails. It could be small, it could be big, but you know, there's so many things that our Father made and designed and created that follow a very symmetrical pattern. And so, I mean, it makes sense that he would ask them to build something. And then we see it reflected from, you know, think about how many times if you've ever built something, you stand back and go, you try to put it in the center.
Right.
You know? Yeah. I mean, you want it to be symmetrical. You know, typically we don't build things and go, I want this side to be completely different than this side.
Right.
So, I mean, some people do that and they call it art.
Yes.
But most people, when you do it in construction, we want it to be the same.
Exactly.
So,
and this is where it says of a talent of pure gold. That's the amount of gold. That's where you get the about a half a gallon. Mm. And that's for the menorah and all the little tools that go with it.
Yeah. That's so a lot.
Do the math and figure it out.
How much is that worth today?
Yes.
It's a lot. All right, so the connection between the almond tree, you know, the menorah is made of one piece of gold, and going back, how could that relate to marriage?
It's one.
It's
all one.
Mm-hmm. And so the part, I mean, it's, you know, it's just the concept, even though there's more that come together than two, but it still represents the concept of, you know, the olive and the almond becoming representing one.
Yeah.
The central branch.
Oh, I thought you were going for polygamy there for a second.
No, not going that way. Not going that way. Not at all. Do not endorse that in any way. That sounds like a terrible idea. So the central branch represents the servant, Yeshua. And the central branch lights all the others. And then I kept thinking of scriptures like abide in me. I and the Father are one, one body. Marriage talk, you know, becoming one flesh.
Yeah.
And the scriptures about the vines. I am the vine and you are the branches.
Just connection.
Yeah. Lots and lots of connections. And so this also this conception and of a perpetual fire. I think this is what started us going is in the Torah reading. There is one of those that talks about keeping the fire lit all the time.
Yeah.
And that's a concept that we're supposed to continue to keep the fire lit within us all the time. And that required the fire required. What does fire require, Jake?
Fire is a cleanser. It cleanses.
True.
And it.
But what does it require to burn?
Oh, what's it require? Fuel, oxygen, and ignition.
Exactly. So, you know, and you can think about a fire that you've. You know, fire in your fireplace in the winter and things like that. You know, you got to keep that fire going or the fire goes out. And especially back in the day, you know, back 100 years ago, even 150 years ago, do you think they lit a fire every single day, or did they keep the same fire going?
They probably kept it going.
Why?
It's easier to keep a fire going than start a fire.
That's right. That's right. And so if you've ever worked outside or ever used a fire to work with as a tool, you know, to get rid of brush or something, I mean, you understand that, you know, if you can keep it going, it is a lot easier than starting over, you know, especially when you've got a good hotbed of coals, you know, that burn all night or something. You still got a stump smoldering. The next morning you get up, it doesn't take much and you got a fire in just a few minutes, as opposed to having to start from scratch and get, you know, you already start with that heat. And so that's kind of that same kind of concept. And, you know, you must tend to it and keep it going. It requires oil. The olives had to be beaten and pressed. And just like that, the almonds, as we talked about last time, they have to be beaten and shaken in order for them to fall off the tree.
Yeah. With a tennis racket.
With a tennis racket.
Or something similar. Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And so definitely a lot of tie-ins to us being beaten and shaken to produce fruit in our life. And so I think a lot of
the fire going.
Yeah. And I'm going to reference Michael Oman again. Michael, he just had a teaching about that concept of, you know, we're seeing the shaking happening all around the world right now. Yeah. And it's easy to fight it and be mad about it. And I do think there's some action we're supposed to do, but I'm not sure if it's that, because I think we're seeing some judgment here and Yahuwah is implementing those things. And I don't want to fight him. If these things are coming from him, I'm not going to be fighting him on it. But I do think I think that's what we're all in the quest of, you know, what is our role here in being awake and woken, in this time.
Right. And one thing, just to jump back real quick to the keeping the fire going. So I like watching like survival shows and stuff like that. And sometimes a guy will go out with like, so there's a show called Alone, and you can take certain number of items with you and all this. And the one guy was like, well, I'll just make a fire with my flint and steel, and then he loses his flint and steel. So he's got to keep that fire going the whole time he's there, or he's not going to have fire because of the area that they're in. It's hard to get a friction fire going and that kind of thing. But he's just got to keep it going the whole time. And if he quits doing it, essentially he's going to die.
Yeah. And that's a concept that we kind of forget, you know, because we just flick the switch or turn the dial and stuff happens.
Yeah.
But for many people around the world today, that's not the life they live.
Right.
And we are very blessed to have the life that we do have. And, but it's easy to get out of touch with this concept of a perpetual fire, but that was a common thing, you know.
Yeah.
Everybody, every culture understood that the fire was precious and you didn't want it to go out.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that definitely applies to our life today. You know, this fire is precious and it is to be guarded. It is to be protected, just like the priest protected it. And then we have a job. It's an active job to feed that fire. You know, you can't, you know, if you fall asleep in this process, your fire goes out.
Yeah.
You have to, you know, if you've ever cooked a brisket and you've had to get up in the middle of the night and stoke that fire, add another log in, and, you know, it's a process, you know, that you have to be very wakeful and watchful to do.
Yeah. So, and I think we kind of do use this concept. It's just not, we don't see it because think of like the pilot light on your heater or your stove or something like that. It's always going.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. That it is. Good. And then 1 Thessalonians 5:2-6.
For yourselves know perfectly that the day of Yahweh so comes as a thief in the night. For when they shall say peace and safety, then sudden destruction comes upon them as travail upon a woman with child, and they shall not escape. But you, brethren, are not in darkness, that day should overtake you as a thief. You are all sons of light and sons of the day. We are not of the night or of darkness. Therefore, let us not sleep as others do, but let us watch and be sober-minded. So be watchful.
Yeah, another connection to the almond, and being watchful. And, you know, that I didn't get that connection when I was in church, but today I'm starting to really open my eyes to, you know, that these concepts are connected. And you do see that he does tell us to not to be asleep.
Yeah.
To be watchful. And, you know, we do know there's a lot of people asleep right now in the world around us. And so they are not awake, and they are not watchful, and they have no clue about these things, and they may not even care.
Yeah. And he tells us people are going to be asleep.
Yeah. Yeah. But we are not to be asleep, and we're to be watchful and to be awoken. Was there anything else you wanted to say here?
No.
And then, so there's this concept, and it was commonly taught as the thief in the night. And it is believed by many Torah scholar, rabbi, and it was probably like in the oral tradition. And I don't take the oral tradition as Torah. I mean, but I do think there's some information in there that can be useful. And this is one of those pieces in there. And the concept was taught that that the high priest, it was part of his duty to keep the fire going. And you would have shifts. And so if you were in the in the priest lineage, you know, you might have night duty and to stay up all night and make sure that this menorah, everything is lit and everything's going like it's supposed to. And if the high priest wakes up in the morning and comes and finds you asleep, it was pretty commonly understood that he would take hot coals and he would wake you up with a pile of hot coals. And we've talked about that before.
Yeah.
See another video. I think it was oil. Gold on the ceiling.
Yeah.
And so I put a link to where that information comes from. This is the Jewish Encyclopedia, and if you scroll on down here, if you just do Control F and type in, I can't remember, what do you type in? Fire or
coals
maybe.
Or burn the guy that fell asleep.
You
search that.
Oh, it's right here.
Oh, and mid.
Priestly guard.
Mid is what you
right say. Here. Yeah. So it's about halfway through there. And that's where that term comes from. And, you know, and to go back to this, you know, another thing about being watchful in this thief in the night, you know, I was always taught, I don't know about you, Jake, but in the church, they taught me that one day Jesus is going to come back and it's going to catch you off guard. Is that what that scripture in Thessalonians said?
No, it said, lest you be caught off guard, basically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It was saying, let's see, but we are not the people that will be taken off guard by the thief, right?
Yeah. And that's because we're watchful. Yeah. We're supposed to be anticipating. And you see a connection between the menorah and how the end times are going to roll out and how the feasts roll out and at the different feasts you are anticipating, especially the fall feast, you're anticipating Yeshua's coming back. And that's what that whole thing is about. And if you are watchful and you're not going to be surprised, you know when these things are going to happen and you're going to be prepared.
Yeah.
Just like, you know, another argument is that the 10 virgins, they, you know, some of them were prepared. They were ready. They didn't fall asleep. They had oil.
Yeah.
And that's what we want to be.
And they weren't surprised by the coming. They were ready for it.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, you do only hear that first part. When Jesus comes back like a thief in the night.
Mm-hmm. You're going to have no idea.
Yeah.
Be ready.
Yeah.
So definitely study that out if you've never studied it. And then we're going to continue the menorah and the almond tree. All this concept required you to be watchful. If you didn't do your job, you fall asleep, the high priest is going to wake you up rather suddenly. And so we kind of did talk about how this applies to us, but
you kind of see some of that happening right now. It's like the world has had this lump of coals heaped upon it to wake us up.
Yeah. And if you haven't gotten some things prepared. What are you waiting on?
You know, get your
toilet paper,
your will and testament filled out, and get your burial plot plans. No, that's not what we're talking about.
No, but definitely, you know, you can see this, what happened in the world with supply chain and things like that. You know, supply chains are still being affected. It's affected what I do in my livelihood. There were many people in the landscaping industry that stopped growing things because they were afraid of what the economy was about to do. And there's been kind of a shortage on some things, and the supply chain got disrupted. And, you see real quick that you need there's some things you need to have extras of, and and that goes back to being watchful and being prepared.
Right.
And we're supposed to be that way.
Exactly.
Now, I do think you cross a line if you start putting your faith in the gold, the guns, and the bullets over Yahuwah.
Right.
Because, you know, our faith should be in him. He's going to take care of us.
Right. But I've heard it said, if you're going to be a prepper, you know, the logical conclusion to that is homestead.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah. Yeah. True. The gift that keeps giving. So in Exodus 25, 30 through 40, you've got a breakdown of the menorah. In Numbers 17, 8, Jeremiah 1, 11, 12, similar language. All symbols of a resurrection life, fulfillment. And so you've got the budded part of Aaron's rod. And on the candlestick, you have a knob or a bud. And you know, the source is the Father, the flowered Aaron's rod makes a flower, and the begotten Son, and then the almond fruit. You know, this one's equating it to the Holy Spirit. But it's definitely interesting. So, does this remind you of Yeshua being the vine and where his branches? How would that tie into this concept that we see here?
Well, they're all, you know, tied into that main branch of the menorah. And then without all of it together, you know, it's just that candlestick you had at church.
Mm-hmm. Back to the stick, you know. So. True. So, and we are supposed to, I mean, we talked in one point about Yeshua being the center, the servant candle lighting all the others. And you see the symmetry where everything is matching and perfectly paired.
Yeah.
And so here is another reference to, or another image of close-ups of the menorah and the almond here, and the almond bud. And you can see that's the inspiration, and they knew this. These were around. It wasn't foreign to them.
Right.
And it shows the knobs and the flower bud, the branches and the bowls. And then there's a whole other rabbit trail I did not want to chase about numbers, numerology things in there, and I didn't even mess with that one.
Really, Matt? You're not going to tell us what 7 + 2 equals?
No, because I don't know.
You're afraid to tell everyone.
That's right. I'm afraid.
Yeah, same thing with the, you know, Yeshua is the vine, we are the branches.
Yep. And that came from many manna moments.
Many, many manna moments.
And then you have this whole concept of, you know, so many things can come back to the menorah. You know, they had the law, the prophets, other writings, the gospel. I don't know what that says, but
Acts.
Acts, uh-huh.
The
apostles? Revelation? I don't know.
Applets? Oh, epistles.
Epistles.
Gotcha.
And then Isaiah, wisdom. So the seven spirits, with the spirit of wisdom, counsel, knowledge, the Lord, fear, might, understanding. And then, you know, we know that in Revelation 4, we're you know, this seven lamps is the menorah.
Yeah.
Not a
seven
lamp.
Seven separate candles.
Yeah, because the other thing, you know, I had no idea what a lamp looked like. You know, I'm like, lamp.
Yeah.
You know, as a kid, I didn't
a vase
that.
With a shade and a
yeah. Well, people didn't show me pictures of this. You know, this is not something common in most churches today. They're not spending much time talking about a menorah, what it meant, what it looked like. And then the letters in Revelation, the churches of Revelation.
Seven churches, right.
And each church had a different letter. And then the appointed times. And I think this one, you know, these two over here are the ones that I probably favor and have spent the most time looking at. Because those to me are really where it's at. And, you know, because I guess you could take days of the week. I mean, it's like anything seven, you know, you could put here.
Right.
And so definitely it makes sense that the appointed times and the feasts would fit on here.
Exactly.
Back to the rod and the staff.
Oh, I gotcha.
So the rod and the staff, they led the people out of Egypt with an almond. So Moses and Aaron lead them out with an almond branch. The almond branch being the staff or the rod of God. You remember we told you the story in Jasher 77 of how Moses picked up the almond that had been originally Adam's staff, picked it up out of the ground, and it became his.
Right.
So they go along and they camp at an almond grove.
I'm very wary of this term grove, but yes, they were.
You just don't like the word?
Well, usually the groves is where bad things happen.
No.
But
stay away from the grove.
Yeah. Almonds are good, though.
Yes, almonds are good. Especially almond joys. But to the mountain of almonds. they camp at. They get led out with an almond. They camp at an almond grove. They go to the mountain of almonds and they make a menorah out of almonds. So clearly almonds is important.
It's kind of a running theme that, you know, before you jump into this kind of study, you don't realize they're everywhere.
Yeah, everywhere. So the rod and the staff. So once again, the menorah of almonds and olive oil become an eternal symbol for the people. We probably should be watchful to the concept.
Ooh, I see what you did there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Because almonds are shaped like an eye. Yes. And they're watchful.
Yep.
Talking about watching, like mm-hmm. a tower mm-hmm. from the tower.
Very good.
See part one if you're missing
all this. Yeah, see part one. We'll connect all those dots for you and more.
Ooh. Whoa.
So the parable of the virgins, you know, it's another menorah type lesson in marriage. Being watchful like the almond full of light represent the beginning and the end, with the almond being the first to blossom and the olive to be the last. Almond represents watchfulness in the menorah. The oil is the fuel for the light. Be watchful. Just like, so in the story, kind of rephrase the story of the parable of the 10 virgins, if you can.
Rephrase it?
Mm-hmm. Tell what is it?
So first, they need to have almonds. Take almonds with you, and then
eat the almonds.
Well,
I remember that being in the story.
Then you, once you have the almonds, you're watchful. Mm-hmm. So then you will juice those almonds into oil for your lamps.
Maybe you need to go back and read the story yourself.
I'm trying to rephrase it. I'm trying to do it differently.
Oh,
I thought that's what you were going for.
Yes, rephrase it. Put it in your own words. In modern terms.
Oh, that's what you're looking
for. Gotta juice to get, you gotta be juicing them almonds.
Yeah, so.
I hear that's what people do.
Yeah. So, yeah, we haven't figured out how the milk
What
gets
would that do to
yet.
Your blender?
Depends on the quality of the blender, I guess.
Some blenders are better than others.
Yeah. So the 10 virgins. Right? There's 10 of them. They got their oil lamps. Some of them did not have oil in their lamps.
Made with olive oil.
Correct. And then the time came when the bridegroom came and said, hey, all right, let's go. I'm here for you. And five of them were like, my lamp is empty. Can we have some of your oil?
They were in darkness.
Yes.
Ooh. They'd fallen asleep.
So they'd been thiefed by the bridegroom. And the other ones are like, no, you can't have none of my oil. You know. So
then they sent them out.
They had to go get their own. Mm-hmm. And then by the time they did that, it was too late.
Yeah. Yeah. And they really were in darkness. So, but yeah, that's a great story to go back and look at and about how it applies to us and keeping our fire going and having the oil to keep our fire going, you know, and, you know, oil, some people have said before it's teaching. It also could be trials and tribulations, the oil that you produce in the fruit, you know, in your life. That comes from, you know, being pressed and being shaken and beaten. And, you know, those things produce the oil in us.
Right.
And I think that's a pretty clear concept through there. But and I read number 17, 1 through 5.
And Yahweh spoke to Moses, saying, speak to the children of Israel and take of every one of them a rod according to the house of their fathers, of all their princes according to the house of their fathers, 12 rods, write every man's name upon his rod. And you shall write Aaron's name upon the rod of Levi, for one rod shall be for the head of the house of their fathers. And you shall lay them up in the tabernacle of the congregation before the testimony, where I will meet with you. And it shall come to pass that the man's rod whom I shall choose shall blossom, and I will make to cease from me the murmurings of the children of Israel, whereby they murmur against you.
Yeah, this is a classic showdown moment. You know, this is like yeah. Clint Eastwood and the whistling. Wah, wah, wah. Yes, that's exactly what's happening here. And it's a line in the sand moment. It's for anybody a fan of Texas and the Alamo, you know, this is the old legend where they drew a line in the sand. And, you know, this is it. You know, we're going to see who is really the guy here. And
the old come and take it situation.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there definitely was some trouble a brewing in the camp, and they were arguing, and they're just like, you know, maybe some jealousy or thinking, you know, different people thinking they should be in charge. And we're like, okay, we got this. We're going to settle this. Everybody bring me your stick, write your name on it. And we'll there's going to be a showdown. We're going to see what happens. And so, you know, this, I brought this one back, you know, this walking stick does have my son's name on it. And so, you know, so I don't think that would be a common, you know, it'd be, it's not a crazy story to think you would write your name on something that you possessed.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, think about it. Your name's probably in your underpants. So
Calvin,
mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Coolidge.
Yes, Calvin Coolidge. Yes. Mm-hmm. Or fruit.
Mm. Yeah.
Fruity. I don't know about that one. So, yes, we are going down a rabbit trail. Okay, so read this one. Number 17:6-8.
And Moses spoke unto the children of Israel, and every one of their princes gave him a rod apiece for each prince one, according to their father's houses, even 12 rods, and the rod of Aaron was among their rods. And Moses laid up the rods before Yahweh in the tabernacle of witness. And it came to pass that on the morrow, Moses went into the tabernacle of witness, and behold, the rod of Aaron for the house of Levi was budded and brought forth buds and blossomed and bloomed blossoms and yielded almonds.
Which is amazing. I mean, yeah. Overnight, a stick that's been cut off of a tree for who knows how long, years, you know, I don't know, maybe
according to legend, thousands of years, mm-hmm. Right? If that's the Adam stick.
Yeah. Yeah. And so not only does it in one night, not having roots in the ground and not having any water put on it, it creates buds, flowers, and makes almonds.
Which on a tree that requires a lot of water.
Yeah. Yeah. So it is pretty amazing. So it becomes very clear in this showdown, who the winner is.
Yes.
And everyone is, you know, there are probably guys that went away kind of in shame, you know, like, oh, well, I guess it wasn't me.
Yeah.
And so here's an image of the rod and staff of the one budded and possibly what, you know, what it would look like if you had these 12 rods. They, you know, each one, they could fashion it kind of however they wanted. It didn't say you had to do this or make it look like this, just, you know, bring this. So we're going to go a little deeper into the rod and staff. And so, and even the concept of tribe. So in Exodus 7:12 says, each one threw down his staff. It became a snake, but Aaron's staff swallowed up their staffs. And then Exodus 4:17, so Moses took his wife, his sons, he put them on a donkey, and started back to Egypt, and he took the staff of God in his hand. And so there is this concept you'll see of the rod of God. Jake explained there's a little bit of weirdness here.
Yeah, we have verse 20 written in the verse on the right, and at the bottom it says Exodus 4:17. The actual verse is 4:20.
Yeah.
So,
but the word here is used 204 times in the Hebrew, used primarily to describe the rod of Moses and Aaron, used 150 times in Genesis, Exodus, and Numbers. So of the 204 times it's used, 150 times it's used in Genesis, Exodus, Numbers. So definitely, you know, when you see a word used a lot, it's like, pay attention. Yeah. Important. So would you read these scriptures?
Sure. So we got Proverbs 13:24. He that spares his rod hates his son, but he that loves him chastens him betimes. That sounds like a funny, I don't know what translation you're using.
But I don't know.
And then in Psalm 23:4, yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for you are with me, thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me.
So Jake, would you say there's a clear difference between a rod and a staff?
There's a bit of a difference, yeah. So the first one seems to be the rod is for correction. But if you look at the second one, it says the rod and the staff comfort him. So there's a, though it's correcting in the first here, rod, right, of correction, it's chastening. It's a comfort to him because Yahweh chastens the ones he loves, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I guess you could find comfort in the fact that your parents are beating you. No, mm-hmm. No, I'm not advocating that. I'm just saying that, yeah, sometimes you need the discipline of a rod. And I was of that time frame of having discipline.
I'd certainly, as a father, I have been that with my children when they were young.
Yep.
So,
and so,
and it is true. I mean, you know, if it, and you know, you can make a solid argument that so much of the rebellion we see today is simply children who aren't obeying their parents.
Yeah.
Who've wandered away, you know, from everything from Antifa to, you know, just everything we see. It's a lot of children that aren't obeying their parents, that thumb their noses at their parents. And it may be multi-generations here that have, that's happened to. And, you know, we keep doing that and we get really far away from the truth.
Yeah.
But definitely this concept of it's both together and they both bring comfort, just like the law. And I believe when we had one of the discussions we had with Michael Trinkman, we asked him about that, and he talked about the law being part of that comfort.
Yeah.
Knowing where the boundaries are. You know, we serve an Elohim of order. And so when we see the chaos and the craziness and the people that are like, let's defund the police. Who needs them? We're fine. People will be just fine, yeah, without them.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's people that don't understand order,
right,
law and order. And that, and I'm not saying that that's all perfect, because it's not. It's humans. It's mankind. And it's there is one perfect law system, and it was laid out in the Torah.
And we don't follow. We don't follow that.
And, you know, part of that is complicated because we don't have priests, and how do we follow that? But
right.
But the system that Yahuwah set up is perfect, and we aren't doing that. And then these other scriptures here.
Proverbs 22:15, foolishness is bound in the heart of a child, but the rod of correction shall drive it far from him. And Proverbs 29:15, the rod and reproof give wisdom, but a child left to himself brings his mother to shame.
Mm. You know, the guy that I work with, and he's actually my boss, and he says all the time, very famous saying that he says is, you know, he's like, Matt, there are some people that just need to be punched. And you know, and at first you're kind of like, well, that seems pretty harsh, but it is true. There are some people that they need that, and they never had that in their life. And I'm not saying you should go around being the one arm. What's the one-armed man? The one punch man. Oh. Yeah. So I'm not saying you should go around and do
punching people.
Yeah. And just trying to lay people out, because you're going to find somebody bigger, badder, and stronger than you, and you will find yourself on the ground with broken stuff.
Right.
So
at that point, you're the one that needs to see this punching.
Yeah. But there are so many people. And then think about it in your own life. I told my kids when they were growing up, when they had a problem with a bully, especially my boys, I'm like, you just need to punch that kid in the face. Don't put up with it. Just punch him in the nose. You're going to get in trouble, and that's fine. I'm not going to be mad at you, but that kid's going to stop. If you just rear back and punch him in the nose, it's going to take one time, and he's going to go, oh, he's going to find somebody else.
Yeah, my dad gave me criteria for when that was a good, you know, course of action to take. And as long as the criteria was met, then he'd have my back, you know? Mm-hmm. So I wouldn't really get in trouble for it. Cause really when I'm growing up, if I'm in trouble from like someone else, it's not the same as being in trouble from your father.
No.
So
no.
As long as my dad was on my side, I was good to go. I was okay.
Well, even as a school teacher, there were times when there were times when I saw stuff like that happen, and I'm like, yeah, I mean, what'd you expect was going to happen? And I would even tell him, I was like, I saw you. You went out of your way to do this, and then he did that. Of course they hit you back.
Right.
What did you think was going to happen? Yeah. And now you're whining because what you did was okay, but then they retaliate, and now you're mad.
Right.
And so many times, you know, just like you see in sports and things, a guy that squeals, you know, he's the one that gets the attention, and he may have caused the whole thing.
Right.
And he just got a piece of his own medicine and he doesn't like it.
Yeah.
So, but there is this concept of, being disciplined and understanding, if we just leave ourselves to our own stuff, it's not good. You know, it doesn't turn out well. And that's what these scriptures are referring to. You know, if we don't have discipline in our life and we don't get that, we become kind of monsters and out of control and just ridiculous.
Yeah. Self-control is one of the best things you can teach your kids. And scripture says as much.
Mm-hmm.
And it's because you don't have self-control on your own. You have to be taught self-control.
Yeah. And our world teaches otherwise, just the opposite.
Yeah. Otherwise, it's do what you like and do what feels right.
Get rich and die trying. That's what the whole world seems to be doing. And then Proverbs 23:13.
Withhold not correction from the child, for if you beat him with the rod, he shall not die. You shall beat him with the rod and shall deliver his soul from hell.
There you go. Good words to live by. And so, especially if you're a parent, you know, you should be disciplining your children. If you're not, you're making a huge mistake. And, you know, even people that aren't of faith, you know, they've learned this lesson the hard way, and they'll tell you, man, that kid is terrible. His parents don't do anything. He just does whatever. And, you know, and they generally don't turn out to be great human beings that we all love and our society is built upon. You know, we don't build our society on people that just run amok and have never been disciplined.
Yeah. And the point here is for us to be, you know, people that understand that Yahweh will use his rod to correct us.
Yeah.
And you know, also to use it in a practical sense for us, for our lives.
Yeah. You should discipline your children.
Right.
But we see a whole world of children that have not been disciplined, and it's not headed in a good direction. But Torah tells us that.
Yeah.
Right there. It delivers you. And just like when we allow the father to discipline us, it will help deliver us. And if we fight it, we're just fighting him. And I don't think that it's going to go well.
No.
And then Hebrews 12:10 and Revelation 13:9.
They disciplined us for a little while as they thought best, but Elohim disciplines us for our good in order that we may share in his holiness. No discipline seems pleasant at the time, but painful. Later on, however, it produces a harvest of righteousness and peace for those who have been trained by it.
And once again, going back to the connection of to harvest that almond tree, you had to beat it. You had to shake it to get the harvest. And so, I mean, I think that they, you know, especially in the time that these words are spoken, people are more connected to agriculture. They understand these concepts that, you know, we sometimes have forgotten. And then Revelation 13.
Those whom I love, I rebuke and discipline. So be earnest and repent.
So clearly, goes back to what you said about the Father, because he does care for us, he is disciplining us.
Right. And you know, when I never really, sure, I heard this concept growing up and everything, but it didn't really hit home till I grew up and I was out of the house and I was like, you know, I really do appreciate the fact that my dad would step in and lay down the law on me if need be. And not that I was like this unruly kid or anything, but you know, sometimes you need a rod of correction. And I looked back and I was grateful for the fact that, you know, he held the line. So,
Yeah, that's good. And, you know, and I think if we're all honest, we can think of sometimes it's not even your parents. It could be, you know, all kinds of people that enter your life. And sometimes it is maybe the kid that you were given a hard time and they retaliate and you realize, whoa, I am a jerk.
Yeah.
And, you know, sometimes it does take those kinds of moments and that kind of discipline and being embarrassed and eating some crow to learn from. And you should learn from these things. And that's wise. It said, the text even says, you know, if you learn from these things, you know, it's considered wisdom.
Right.
It's considered foolish to not learn from them.
Right. And I think it's good to know, like as a parent, you know, these things are to be done in love, mm-hmm. like with the point of teaching and instruction.
Yeah.
Not out of anger.
Out of rage and uncontrol.
Because now you've lost the self-control aspect of it.
Control is the key, you know, and I think that's where a lot of people have gotten in trouble is they lose control. And I think sometimes that people go too far. They're like, well, I'm afraid that I'm going to lose control. You know, and then they're afraid to do anything, but, you know, pray about these things too, you know, in the heat of anger, when you're so mad at your child, walk away from it for a minute and step back and reflect and ask Yahuwah for guidance and he'll help you with these things. But clearly, and every kid's different too. You know, some kids you just have to look at, some kids you do have to, lay a hand or, you know, lay the rod of discipline on physically, literally. And different things, you know, require that, you know, when your child is small and you're trying to keep them from, you live in a neighborhood and you don't want them to run out in the street. And if you've just tried, oh, don't do that, this is not going to work. I'm going to tell you right now, the kid's going to run right out in the street. And if the child, unfortunately, does something bad happens to them,
it's worse than a spanking or a rod of correction.
That's right. And then that, to me, comes back on the parent. You know, you have some responsibility there, and you've got to teach that child no means no. And you may not understand it at the time, but I am wise and I understand that the car can kill you. You don't have to understand it. You don't have to get it right now at two, that the car can kill you.
Yeah.
You don't get it, but I do. And that's the way the Father sees us. He's looking down and he sees the 1,000-mile perspective and we see the 1-inch perspective. And he's telling us, look, I'm telling you right now,
quit running out in the road.
This is going to hurt you.
Yeah.
And I am going to whip you back in shape. And this is not pleasant, but this is much more unpleasant.
Yeah.
And you know, and I think that's why he gives us children, is it helps us understand
definitely
his perspective and that. So, but now we got the weird screen again.
The old weird screen.
And then, so when we look at these words, how do you, is that?
Matt.
I know, that's what I was looking at.
Like, Matt, my name?
And this translates to staff, to branch, to tribe. And so you're going to see a lot of overlap between some of these words. And then A is staff, rod, shaft, branch, tribe. And so that was one of the words. And so this is, it's, of course, it's a word. one of the words. And so this word is in Genesis 38, like several times, Exodus 4, Exodus 7. So, and these are some of the scriptures that we already looked at. So definitely this had multiple meanings and could be used in different ways. But this is Strong's H4294. Any of those jump out at you, Jake, that you wanted to read?
Exodus 4:17, and you shall take this rod in your hand wherewith you shall do signs. I think that's jumped out at me because it's right at eye level.
And then Exodus 4:20, and Moses took his wife, his sons, and he set them upon, we'll say, a donkey. Okay. And he returned to the land of Egypt and Moses, and he took the rod of Elohim in his hand. And so that's kind of where that concept of rod of God, you know, there's a weapon even called the rod of God that drops a rod from the sky down and does all kinds of damage.
Yes.
But that's probably exactly where they got the term for that weapon. So anyway, so definitely research it. Check it out. The word staff is, how do you say this?
Mishana.
And so it could be staff or stave, support of every kind. And so you see it, I believe it's 11 times here in these verses from Exodus to, is that Zechariah? Z-E-O? What? I don't know what that says.
Ezekiel? Zechariah.
But
I like the idea of it was saying that it's anything that supports. So I just picture, you know, this guy leaning on his staff. Mm-hmm. Oh, I guess I got this here. This guy here leaning on his staff in this area.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And it's the same word that we see in Psalms 23:4. That word staff is 49:38, which is what we're looking at right here.
Yeah.
So, yep. And then it's right there, 23:4. All right. And then Shavet.
Like the marinade. Most people will not know this. There's a marinade called Shavetta's. It's a New York based marinade, and for until the internet you could only get it there, but look up Shavetta's.
Okay, I'll be right on that.
Marinate your chicken in it. Fantastic. Mm. Okay,
they have not sponsored this.
They did not sponsor Shavetta's. Please sponsor our material. No.
Well, happily marinate our meat with it.
Yes,
marinate our chicken with it.
Yeah.
So rod, staff, branch, offshoot, club, scepter, tribe, rod, staff. So you can see mark of authority.
I like this shaft of spear or dart, like Phineas.
Yeah. I didn't even thought about that. Staffed
that guy.
Yeah. So, you know, you put a sharp point on this, and what do you have?
A spear.
Yeah. So.
Yep.
But yeah, that is an interesting concept. So definitely anytime you saw this represented authority. You know, this is like their signature. And it's kind of a lost art in our culture. But in a lot of ways, maybe this becomes your name and what your name means, your family name. You know, and that's something in my tradition, that my family name, you know, has some issues, and I could have changed my name at some point, but I decided I wanted to keep it because my grandparents offered to pay for a name change, and I could have taken their name, but I decided, you know, I wanted my name to mean something, and I wanted to create a new tradition that was different from what my name had previously meant. Mm-hmm. And you know, I hope to be raising children that carry on a new name, you know, a new rod, if you will, a new staff, you know, that means something different than what it meant before.
Yeah, but you can't just run away from your problems.
Mm-mm.
Kind That's of right. situation.
Yeah.
I like that.
But so once again, you know, research these words, look them up, you know, do some word searches. And the Blue Letter Bible is a great place to look up some of these words and find out what they mean. And these are the places of Shebet, which is Strong's H7626, 190 times in 178 verses. And so it's used quite frequently.
Yeah, it's interesting. I like this Genesis 49:16. Dan shall judge his people as one of the tribes of Israel, as one of the rods of Israel, one of the staffs of Israel, to support of Israel. It's pretty interesting to think of it in that way.
Mm-hmm. Anything else you see in there you want to?
Well, they're all kind of similar.
Yeah.
You're trying to get across the same concept.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And then going back to almonds being watchful in that concept, it also very much relates to the priests, the Levi or the Levi being guardians. The almond is shaped like an eye. It's the first to bloom. It takes about 40 days to mature.
40 is a significant number.
40 days. And also, isn't it, it seems like it's significant in gestation of even human babies. There's something to do with 40.
I think 42 weeks is the.
But even
I'm not a mother.
Yeah, I'm but not, certainly not. And even then, 40. It seems like there's.
I think 40 is considered days. Anything. Yeah, I think 40 is kind of the. Go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead.
I was just gonna say 40. I think is the time where they consider it to be like full term,
maybe viable outside the womb. Something kind of like what that. I was thinking. Yeah. So there's definitely a lot of things that are connected to 40 for sure. That, you know, that's a number. When anytime you see 40, you like pay attention. This is important. So almonds require a lot of water, and if they don't get water, that like many plants, they die.
Just like Yahweh Yeshua talks about a lot of, you know, the living water.
Mm.
You know, you need this constant water.
Yeah. So the month of Abib, there's definitely an almond connection. It's the first month, just like the almond is the first tree to come out. It means swelling, green, flourishing, fresh. And so all of those concepts come with the month of Abib. And there's no coincidence that the almond tree is part of that discussion.
Yeah.
So definitely a connection between that. And so this is the Hebrew months of the year. And so we had a discussion earlier about how it's hard to find these months that aren't corrupted, if you will.
Right.
So what do we mean by that, Jake?
Well, because if you go to scripture, there's only this handful. Hang on, move this over here a little bit. But there's only this handful that are actually called out in scripture as having a Hebrew name for the month. But we do have names for them. You know, we have, if you look up what the Hebrew name for a month is, this is what you're going to get, is these things. Whereas scripture is going to say these things here.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, Gregorian calendar here, but which is, and I don't even like using the Gregorian month names because they're all God names and goddess names and
August, we're not supposed to say
Augustine
like
and all this, and Julius Caesar and all this stuff. Now, if you go to September, October, November, December, that's all, you know, that's all based on a number scale. Sept is 7, oct is 8, nov is 9, dec is 10. So those used to be 7, 8, 9, 10 of the year. So, but then you got Janus and, you know, all these God names that I don't appreciate. And it's almost as though, you know, you're when Yahweh says, don't take my name in vain, you know, he means several things. One of them being, you know, my name carries authority and my name's important to remember and honor. And that yet now we've honored these names by giving them a place in history that will last forever, you know, or at least to us.
Mm-hmm.
So same with the days of the week and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So that's what we mean by they've been corrupted.
Yep, definitely. You know, when we do that, it shakes our camera.
Yes, I just noticed that. And it's also loud on the thing.
Yes, it's very loud. So, but it is interesting, you know, research that if you've never researched these names. And, you know, it's common for people to say Nissan and Tamoose and things like that. But I'm like, look that thing up here. I don't think that's going to be one we want to use that for our month name.
Right.
So, but, you know, it is what it is. And we are in Babylon.
Right.
And so then I started thinking about the root of Jesse. And, you know, and I don't think it's too much of a stretch to think about this. Okay, so if you back up this whole story, that there was a tree in the garden and Adam picks it up and has the staff, and the staff gets passed down. And obviously, anytime you have a staff, it was part of a tree at some point and it was alive. And that, and then even factoring in David, and at some point, maybe sticking the same staff in the ground at the hill of Golgotha. And, you know, lots of connections there. And then the staff that became alive and appeared to be dead, but came back to life and grew and budded and made fruit, that it could also grow a root. And if it did grow a root, would it be the root of Jesse? And I argue, yeah, yeah, that's the connection to the root of Jesse, this righteous branch that we see in Isaiah, in Jeremiah. And if you've never looked that up, go look it up. So read the, if you'll read the scripture, Jake.
The days are coming. The days are coming, declares Yahweh, when I will raise up to David a righteous branch, a king who will reign wisely and do what is just and right in the land.
What are your thoughts about the righteous branch here?
Yeshua, righteous branch, raised up from David.
The root of Jesse.
Yeah.
And not another Dukes of Hazzard reference. It's not Uncle Jesse.
No. And it was funny because they're like, well, David's already dead. What do they mean David is going to be this branch? And, well, clearly it meant the offspring of David, pointing to Yeshua.
Yeah, that's good. And then Isaiah 11:1 says, and there shall come forth a rod, ding, ding, rod out of the stem of Jesse, and branch shall grow out of its roots, and the spirit of Yahuwah shall rest upon him, and the spirit of wisdom and understanding, and the spirit of counsel and might, and the spirit of knowledge, the seven spirits of Yahuwah, which are also in the menorah that we just read about. And I shall make him of quick understanding, the fear of Elohim, and he shall not judge after the sight of his eyes, neither reprove after the hearing of his ears, but with righteousness shall he judge the poor and reprove with equity the meek of the earth, and he shall smite the earth with the rod of his mouth, and with the breath of his lips shall he slay the wicked, and the righteousness shall be the girdle of his loins, and faithfulness the girdle of his reins. A lot of girdling here.
Sounds like you're enjoying the girdles and loins.
How I feel about girdling my loins and exactly what that means, but I don't know. What does that mean, Jake?
Girdling my loins. Well, the girdle. Now, growing up, girdle has a like feminine tone to it, but for me growing up, girdle meant the thing you wear in football that holds like your tailbone pads and your hip pads. So
I didn't think that's where you're going.
No, that's so to me, girdle was always like a manly thing, but, no. So girdle is that area around your waist, like area. So you want to girdle your loins up. I don't know why do we,
I don't know.
This is about thy rod and thy staff, not about girdles.
Yes.
So it's not, I don't know why girdles. We focus on girdles when we come to the real thing to focus on is the rod of out of the stem of Jesse and a branch. So,
And like in verse 4, he's going to smite the earth. It goes back to what you said earlier about Yeshua being the right hand, don't you think?
Yes. Yep. And being the rod, right? Because... And when he talks about with the rod of his mouth, what is it that comes out of Yahweh's mouth? It's the word. And who is the word made flesh is Yeshua.
And he's going to slay the wicked.
Right.
And, you know, and
with this sword from his mouth, which is a two-edged sword, which is what exactly. in the armor of Yahweh is
the word.
Yeah.
Which is him.
It all makes sense.
Yes. Yes, definitely. So, but, you know, study this stem of Jesse out a little bit and its connection to the rod. It's interesting. So then we're going to go back to the stone heart versus stone fruit. So the almond we talked about before is a stone fruit.
Right.
And like our hearts of stone, you can make a solid argument that this almond is just like our hearts of stone. And we don't like to think that we have hearts of stone. We like to look at the people and the, you know, the children of Israel and be like, oh, they're such idiots, but we are them.
We are them.
So,
and we have hearts of stone that
very much
that need to be softened.
In Ezekiel 36:26 in the NIV, it says, I will give you a new heart and put a new spirit in you. I'll remove from you your heart of stone and give you a heart of flesh, a heart of vellum, that can be written upon. What do you think about that, Jake?
He will give you a new heart and put a new spirit in you. That almost sounds like this, some sort of new covenant, if you will.
Yes, new covenant language for sure.
And what's he telling us in this new covenant? He's going to remove our heart of stone and give you a heart of flesh. And then the very next verse is, so that you will, what is it? Do the commands.
Oh, dude.
It's so that you'll do the commands, right? That's why he gives you this. So when we talk about this new covenant being a new heart, a new spirit in you, but void of the commands, that's not what Ezekiel's saying.
Yeah, that's good. And a lot of people have taken, they forget that part or don't want to acknowledge it or remember it.
I think at least this is the way it was for me. When I see the new covenant, I'm thinking Hebrews. I didn't realize that was a reiteration from Ezekiel and Jeremiah.
Yeah.
Right? I'm thinking, okay, well, this is this new thing that came up.
Yeah.
And we don't realize, okay, well, where are they referencing when they're talking about this new covenant?
Mm-hmm.
And it's places like this.
Yep, exactly.
It's all about keeping commands.
Yeah, and that's another thing you should explore that and check that out. Is the New Testament truly the new covenant, or is it the renewed covenant? So, and definitely you can make an argument that it is not a new covenant, it's a renewed covenant.
Yeah,
it's a transformation, like the almond who sheds its hard outer shell, that we too will be transformed into new life. We will trade our heart of stone for a heart of flesh.
Is that like an olive? Is it an olive, an almond that's become soft?
It's almost like that, yeah, yeah. When you think about an almond in a jar that's been canned, it's soft, but it has a very hard center. It's almost the opposite.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
That's interesting. Thinking.
Have you ever had an olive straight from the tree?
No.
Is it squishy?
I don't know.
I've only had the canned almonds or olives.
In a jar or can, yeah.
Green. Mm-hmm. Fantastic.
Yeah, I recommend the green ones especially.
Yes.
But the black ones are okay, like on a pizza.
Kalamata. Bacala. Oh, man. Okay, now I'm making myself hungry.
Yeah, I don't even know what you're talking about. You're just saying words right now.
Yeah.
So maybe you know what he's talking about.
My Italian friends know.
Yes, I'm sure they do.
All of them.
So it's transformation. And so that is kind of the end of the rod and staff. So just like there. So do we need to carry a big stick, Jake? That's what I put down there at the bottom. Is that necessary?
I think we've proven that if you don't have a big stick you're carrying around, you ain't doing it right.
Big stick. So everyone should have a big stick just like this every day of their life.
Yes.
Is that what the scripture says?
I think there's a lot of symbolism that it goes with it, but I don't think it'll hurt to carry around a stick with you, but I don't think that's necessarily what you're supposed to be gleaning from it.
You think that's what...
probably more to it than that.
Was it Teddy Roosevelt that said, walk softly, carry a big stick? I'm pretty sure that's Teddy Roosevelt.
Yeah.
Is that what he meant?
Yes. Yep.
But yeah, no, I don't think you have to carry a actual rod and staff like they did back in the day. But if you wanted to, I don't think there'd be anything wrong with it, for sure. But we've all done it hiking. Yeah. We've done it when we've been outside, and it's something you do more when you're outside. You know, we have these lives, these cush lives of indoorness, shall we say, of air conditioning. And, you know, we don't really have to, we don't have a lot of need for a big stick in our life.
Yeah. Usually your house is, you know, doesn't have a bunch of wild animals mm-hmm. roaming through it that you need to protect yourself from. Now the rod is called a gun.
Yes.
And you keep it by the bedstand, at the bottom of the lake, which is where all mine ended up somehow.
The lake. That's good for your weapon.
Yeah. Well, I mean, somehow all of mine ended up there. So mm-hmm. they're not in my house anymore.
Yes. Yes. But, definitely interesting concepts of the rod and staff and then looking at, the rod of discipline and, versus, the, you know, Yahuwah's mighty right arm staff going out before us and taking care of things. And so, you know, how do we wrap all this up and put a little bow on it, Jake?
Well,
because we really like our bows.
We love bows and we love wrapping these things up. We don't like taking rabbit trails either.
So. No, we don't. We don't chase any rabbit trails. So, rabbits are unclean, Jake.
Exactly. So minus all the tangents, this is a 5-second presentation.
Is it?
Which amounts to there's a rod and a staff. And a hole in the ground and
no. Hole in the bucket, dear Liza.
That's right. Or any other version of that. But no, the point being, you know, there's a rod of correction, right? And a rod of support. Mm. And Yahweh's the one carrying the big stick.
Yeah.
And he does speak softly.
Mm-hmm. He does.
So there you have it.
Yeah. Very good. And, you know, definitely this concept of being watchful and having watchfulness and the expectation that there's something to watch for.
Right.
You know, I think there's a lot of people in the world today that don't even have an expectation that there's something to watch for because they don't even necessarily believe. And so they're like, right. What's the point? You just live and you die.
Yeah.
You know, there's no point. There's nothing to look forward to. But we are people who have hope. And believe that there is something to look forward to. So we encourage you to research, to read your Bible, to read the text, go back to the source. Don't listen to us. Don't listen to man. Don't listen to people that are asking you to give them a bunch of money. Be wary of people that are saying, if you watch this and give me $5, $10, love offering of whatever you feel like the Lord is leading you to. Be very leery of people that talk like that.
Yeah.
And so, you know, this is free. The gospel, the message, it is free. It's and don't squander your time. Right now we have an incredible resource at our fingertips, and we may not always have the internet as it exists today. And, you know, and use this time wisely because it's an incredible moment in time when you can research, you can look these things up, you can Google names and break down every part of the letters and the words and go do so much research. But instead, so many times we fill our life with Netflix and doing what we want, being Esau.
Yeah.
Instead of being like Jacob and being about our father's business. So we encourage you to be about your father's business. Be like Jacob and not like Esau. Research, check these things out, see if what we're saying is true. And as always, we appreciate you being here, watching us and sharing this. We ask you to share this with people you know, far and wide, like it.
Yep.
And give it a thumbs up, click the bell.
Subscribe. So you're always caught up with our latest content.
That's right. So, and remember, this is part two of part one. And also, if you know the Mini Manna people or the other video that we reference in here and can put us in contact, we'd like to talk to them and maybe, you know, have this a similar discussion, kind of get some of their thoughts. And we would like to reach out to others. And if you have a channel and you have some thoughts, reach out to us, contact us through all the different ways you can get a hold of us. Even a comment through YouTube, and we'll follow up with you and get with you. So
always up for conversation and dialogue.
Yep. So. Yep. And of course, when you have it here at the end, we crash and burn on our video feed.
Yeah.
But there we are. We came back. So anyway, we appreciate you being a part of Sabbath Lounge and letting us come into your door. And so this is Matt and Jake signing off.
Yep.
See you later.
Catch you next time.
How do we do this?